drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Yelligan and Tyler Aki.
Welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Tyler Aki and Mike Yelligan talking golf with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season, 9 to 11 a.m. If you ever want to join us, 312-332-3776 is the phone number to call. We're all brought to you by our friends at the Glenview Park Golf Club. And Mike, you are out on site today in the city at South Shore Golf Club for the first of three Chicago Police Department Play Like a Champion Youth Golf Program outings. And South Shore, great spot in the city. How's it look out there, and how's everything going?
Oh, my God. It is unbelievable. We got down here at just before 6 a.m. to start the setup, and we have brought this location to life. We are situated at South Shore on the second hole. And we have, for temporarily part of today, turned a long par four into a short par three, where we're accessing the two tee boxes and the chutes that run out beautifully within these majestic trees. And with the skyline as our backdrop, we have some of the most incredible inflatables, some great golf snag inflatables for the kids to enjoy. We've got Trick Shot, legendary Hall of Fame Dennis Walters coming out to put on a show at around lunchtime for the kids. We've got about 30 to 50 officers that Superintendent Snelling said that's going to be joining us to play with the kids and interact with the kids and have a great time and learn a little bit more about the game and, you know, really how to just play like a champion, like the title of their program suggests. And we are going to have just an exceptional day. We're expecting about 100 kids, plus parents, plus officers, plus staff. So with any good program, it takes a place, and we've got amazing place. The Chicago Parks and the Chicago Park District have been absolutely phenomenal in their cooperation in making this thing happen. And Troon in particular is the management company with the golf courses, and they have made this thing so easy for us to come in, install, and really put on what I think is a heck of an event. And Mother Nature, knock on wood,
has shined
nicely on us. The city, I mean, this city looks absolutely awesome this morning. And I can't wait for people to get out here. It is going to be a terrific day here out at South Shore, where we're going to have great fellowship between our Chicago police officers and a lot of the neighborhood kids at risk that are going to be here today with us, and we're going to change a lot of lives.
Absolutely. All right, so we got a lot going on today. Obviously, we're a week away, actually less than that because it starts on Thursday, from the U.S. Open. Can you believe it? We are already on our third major of the year, Mike, and the U.S. Open going out to Oakmont, and I don't know if you've seen the weather out there. Rain, 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 Monday through Wednesday. I think it's going to lead to a lot of the same stuff that we saw at the PGA Championship, which led to some frustration. But also, those roughs are going to be as thick as we have probably ever seen them for a U.S. Open. And speaking of which, Andy North will join us at 9:35 to preview the U.S. Open on the 40th anniversary of his second U.S. Open title. 40 years ago, 1985 was when he won his second U.S. Open. So he'll join us about 30 minutes rather from now to get you ready for all the festivities out in Pennsylvania. But you look at this U.S. Open and everything leading into it, you've had some guys go out and play some practice rounds at Oakmont, kind of scout out the course a little bit. I think we could be looking at absolute carnage. And people always talk about, oh, you're playing against the course. Something tells me the course is going to win this one.
I have a sneaking suspicion the old lady Oakmont is going to shine in a way that we've never seen a major championship ever actually bring these guys to their knees. This is setting up to be what I consider another massacre. They had the infamous massacre in 1974 at Wingfoot where nobody finished under par. where Hale Irwin won, and I think he won either with plus four or plus seven. I don't know if it'll be quite that bad, but it's going to be bad. And if they can't get those mowers out because of the amount of rain, oh, I can't even imagine what that rough is like. Bryson showed a couple of videos this past week of him trying to advance it and chip it. But, no bueno for him. And he also admitted that he's never seen a setup as difficult as what he just saw. Adam Scott and Rory played a practice round last week, and Adam Scott hit nine fairways and was three over.
Yeah.
And I guess Rory made a couple of triples, a quad, and a couple of doubles while he was out there. So this thing could get really interesting, and what I will really be interested in, what we should put a bet on, is the over-under. What is the highest score that's going to get shot?
Yeah.
Because you've got some wild people that have made it into the field that got on a little heater at the sectional, and now they're going to wake up and not only find themselves in the U.S. Open, but perhaps the hardest venue they've ever contested in 125 years.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You brought this stuff up about Adam Scott and also Rory McIlroy. There was someone who said a veteran club member reminded Rory McIlroy that Johnny Miller made four on the hole that he was playing that day when he shot his historic 63, a par three, the par three eighth. Johnny Miller made a four on that hole when he shot his historic 63 to win the 1973 U.S. Open, to which McIlroy replied, "That's great. Did he make a seven on number two as well?" Like, that's the difficulty that this course is providing. And like you mentioned, he was out there with some doubles and triple even. And you're going to see some really good players miss the cut at this event. So I don't think there's anything that would really shock me. Maybe Scotty missing the cut would shock me, but that's about it. Everything else, I think, is on the table for this event.
No doubt. And you just don't know what is going to happen and when it's going to happen, because I think you are going to see a lot of crooked phone number type score shot. We might actually see our first double digit, like, in a long time in a major championship. It could conceivably happen without any real effort, because Oakmont, and I have played it a handful of times, and I have said this and I'll say it again, it is the hardest golf course I have ever played, ever walked on, with you doing nothing, that has no water to it. And their bunkers are deep. It is a relentless golf course. It never lets up. Those bunkers are deep, and there's just no let up. There is no easy hole to take a breath and say, okay, I've got this one, I just have to bang it out in the fairway and I'm good. Everything has a certain unique challenge to it. Even when you get to these greens, your challenge is only beginning, because rumor has it that they're going to have these greens at about 15 on the stimp meter. So allegedly, rumor has it that the members say they actually slow the golf course down for the U.S. Open. I'm not sure I believe that quite, you know, that statement, but they do on a regular basis keep it very quick. But we are going to see the deepest rough and the fastest greens we have ever seen, and you throw in some elements of weather and you've got yourself a perfect recipe for carnage and massacres.
Yeah, it's going to be, especially, not to say that it happened this year, but like, I think back to the PGA Championship last year where we saw scores in the 20s. We're going to be far from that. Far. Like, if you had to guess, you brought up, all right, what's the winning score here? What would you put it at?
I'm going to say even.
Even's going to be good.
I think we might
go plus. I was thinking maybe like a plus two.
Yeah, that was really where I was starting to go, but I want to give them some credit. I got to believe that somebody is going to be playing a course that the rest of that field's not familiar with. And I think whoever wins is going to win by a couple to three shots. Like, their game is just going to be just so much better than everyone else in terms of finding fairways and finding the proper positions on those green complexes. But one guy will play a golf course in a way that no other guy can, and most of the guys are going to say, hey, that's a game that I'm just not familiar with this week, and he deserves to win.
You know what's funny? You say that, and I agree. I do think that this is going to be an event where someone ends up winning it by two or three strokes. But I don't think that takes away from what the drama will be, because we could totally see, it's won by two or three strokes, but the leader may double and then double again and have a two-stroke lead at the time, and all of a sudden they're back two strokes. Like, something like that would not shock me in the slightest, because I could see this thing just flipping on its head. I think you'll see on that Sunday, you'll see that leaderboard cycle all over the place. And especially if we get someone who's atop that leaderboard or in the mix that hasn't won it before, or won like a major, or won high-level golf, an elevated event or something like that, we could see someone like that really spiral out of control when they're learning how to win on a Sunday at a golf course that is not going to be really suited for anybody's game.
That's 100% true. And we could see some, like, you know, with good theater, we could see some real tragedies, you know, and in terms of the guy had the most unbelievable, dreamlike first few days, but then on Sunday, he got back to reality. And that reality could be so mind-blowing, shocking, like 84 on the last day with somebody, because I could see it happening, especially with somebody that went through their local, got to sectional, and, you know, if they find themselves in a position where they've made the cut and they have a chance to contend, or even one of your regular tour players who's never won before and finds themselves in the hunt for this thing, between all of those mind games and the fact that Oakmont, I believe from historical perspective, said that that golf course was originally rated as a par 80. And that's what some of the members have been saying. So that gives you an idea how hard that course is or was. And so, yes, you could see some real tremendous falls on that leaderboard. It's going to be a very volatile week, I think. I think you could see a totally different leaderboard from Thursday afternoon to Sunday and not see one name that you saw on Thursday is no longer there come Sunday.
Right. It would not shock me if we see a new leader at the end of each day, like four different guys. It's just going to be that level of volatility throughout. 312-332-3776. If you want to talk a little bit about everything taking place this upcoming week with the U.S. Open getting set to tee off at Oakmont, we will also get you our fantasy golf picks coming up a little bit later on in the show as well. We'll talk to Andy North about 20 minutes from now, U.S. Open champion two times, and also an ESPN golf analyst. He'll give you all of his thoughts on what to expect out at Oakmont. But coming up next, I do want to talk a little bit of Rory, because this was a guy, won the Masters this year after the heartbreak that he had all of 2024. But is he starting to turn golf fans off on him a little bit based off of his participation level this year and everything else that we've seen since his Masters victory? We'll talk a little bit of Rory McIlroy when we come back. This segment's been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
The segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Andy North will be with us 15 minutes from now, getting ready for the U.S. Open. And Rory McIlroy, out at the Canadian Open this week, did not make the cut, by the way. Did not play very well over the course of his 2 days out there. But I do want to bring up some of the stuff that he said and addressed before he teed it up in Canada this week. And there are two things that really stuck out to me, and I think maybe aren't sitting well with a lot of people. Part of it is him not addressing the media the last couple of weeks. And in golf, it is a choice. You do have the right to refuse to speak to the media. But it is usually like a common courtesy that they'll at least once over the course of the 2 or even 4 days, if they make the cut, will address something and say something. And, you know, like Amanda Baleonis took her shots, too, at Rory during her Bryson interview during the PGA Championship, when at the end of it she said to Bryson, "We know you don't have to do this, so thank you for speaking with me today." But I did want to bring this up. This was Rory McIlroy. Let's start with him sort of talking about not playing last week at the Memorial. He sat out a few of these elevated events now, and it's something that's strange, and I think it's the difference between him and Scotty right now, is that last year, like, Rory cannot match what Scotty did last year. And part of it is because right after winning the Masters, Scotty went right back out and played the next week and won. And Scotty was playing golf pretty much every single week, it felt like, especially all of the elevated events, and was going out defending titles and trying to win in back-to-back weeks. And it's why he put up the historic year that he did. But this is Rory talking about the decision not to play, and also just kind of reflecting on the year that he's had and why he's made some of the decisions that he's made.
I don't know if I'm chasing anything. I would certainly say that the last few weeks, you know, I've had a couple of weeks off, and you know, going and grinding on the range for 3 or 4 hours every day is, you know, maybe a little tougher than it used to be. Just, you know, you have this event in your life that you've worked towards, and it happens. You know, sometimes it's hard to find the motivation to get back on the horse and go again. So I think the last 2 weeks have been good for me just as a reset, just to sort of figure out where I'm at in my own head, what I want to do, where I want to play, and yeah, reset some goals. You know, I thought it was a good time to reset some goals. I've had a pretty good first half of the season, and I want to have a good second half of the season now too.
So talking a little bit about all of that, and like with Rory, I'm very like, I don't know how I feel exactly about the way that he's kind of approached things ever since winning the Masters, but I will say I feel a little turned off, like, with some of the comments that he's made and just overall not playing in a lot of events either.
You know, I do agree with you. I think Rory is experiencing what I call post-Masters hangover or letdown. You know, he wanted to win, but he's wanted to win that thing for the last 10 years, and now he finally did. So it's like the old adage, be careful for what you wish for, you just might get it, and he did. So now he's trying to figure out, what's life like now? Do I still have the fire burning in my belly? See, you got to remember, when Tiger Woods did what he did, that's why this is so phenomenal. And I still think the record that Tiger has of like 7 years and then some where he never missed a cut, that to me is one of the most impressive things in the history of the game of golf. Because look, Rory just missed a cut. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy for these top players to do it, because is the fire still there? Do you still want to win more than you've ever wanted to win in your life as you keep winning? See, Tiger did. But human nature is to sort of do what I think Rory's alluding to. And he almost comes across as like, well, I have no more obligation to you as fans. I have no more obligation to this game. I don't have any more obligations. In fact, it sounds like he's goalless. Sounds like he needs to create some new goals. And he's sort of playing blind right now, just existing, kind of going through the motions is probably the best way to put it. But I do think there's a chip on his shoulder because of the driver. Yeah. And I know when Andy talked to us last time, he said, that doesn't bother him. I have a sneaking suspicion it is. And So I would love to ask Andy a little bit more about that driver, because he's hinting right now that it's bothering him at the Canadian Open.
Yeah.
I mean, he only hit four fairways yesterday, and that was his worst round as a professional since he joined the tour.
Yeah, this was him talking about the driver incident. For those who are unaware of it or maybe need your memory jogged a little, Rory's driver failed an inspection at the PGA Championship. And he wasn't alone. Like, it also happened to Scottie Scheffler as well, who ends up winning it. But it wasn't up to the standards that the PGA Tour has laid out. And usually the stuff doesn't get out. And at the end of the day, really not a huge deal either. It happens more often than you would think. You just don't always hear about it. But this was Rory addressing that and just everything that went down with his driver, Scotty's driver, and the mentality that arose out of it.
The driver stuff, there was, I was a little pissed off because I knew that Scotty's driver had failed on Monday, but my name was the one that was leaked. It was supposed to stay confidential. Two members of the media were the ones that leaked it. So why, you know, I didn't want to get up there and say something that I regretted either, you know, because there's a lot of people that I'm trying to protect. Scotty, I don't want to mention his name. I'm trying to protect TaylorMade. I'm trying to protect the USGA, PGA of America, myself, you know, so I just didn't want to get up there and say something that I regretted at the time. And with Scotty's stuff, like, that's not my information to share. I knew that that had happened, but, you know, that's not on me to share that. And I felt, you know, that process is supposed to be kept confidential, and it wasn't for whatever reason. And, you know, that's why I was pretty annoyed at that.
Yeah, it felt kind of straw man to me with, first of all, blaming the media for leaking it and using that as his guard as to why he wasn't speaking for the week.
Well, first off, when he says two media members leaked it, well, good for them. That's what they're supposed to do. That's called investigative reporting. Mm-hmm. The person that leaked it to the two media, that's who you should have the problem with. And chances are, that's one of the PGA Tour officials. And so PGA Tour on XM, Sirius XM, mm-hmm. It's those two guys that broke the story. But they didn't, find out. They found out through good journalism, and now they reported it. So that really rubbed me the wrong way, I think, because those guys were doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, and they're darn good at what they do. So, but yeah, because his was found out to be and Scotty's wasn't, that rubbed Rory in the worst of ways. But to your point, it isn't cheating. It's just what happens to the equipment. It just fatigues after a while, and it needs to be taken out of play. But what I think Lucas brought up last week or a week or so ago is the fact that the testing needs to be done more consistent and across the board. And I loved what he said following up, because his comments after we talked to Andy this past week, the USGA and the rest of the world all sat up and took notice of this. I think you're going to see some changes coming up, because I think what they may end up doing is make the players come in after 18 and hand their driver at the end of it and make sure that the serial numbers are matching up. So I think it's been exposed. I think this whole process has shown that the process of testing and all of that is not, they don't have all the kinks in it, out of it. It's got holes in it. And I think they definitely, for the benefit of the players' sake, as well as, you know, the integrity of the play, it needs to be an all or nothing. And I think they're on their way to solving it. But I think Luke is speaking up for what he said, and along with what Rory's going through, are all the reasons why I think it needs to be more front and center, so that it doesn't put like a Xander or a Rory in the light that we think that they're intentionally cheating, because that's not what they're doing.
Right. No, it's always, it's just got this label and stigma around it that it's not really what people think it is. And I think we're going to get closer and closer to that, but obviously there has to be some changes with how the PGA of America, the Tour, the USGA, all everyone's got to get together and figure out some uniformity, how they're going to do this, because that at the end of the day, it's about protecting the players. And these guys, I mean, they use their equipment, and you just never know. You can start a round, and it conforms to the standards. And then you can get to the eighth hole, and it's no longer up to par for what the PGA of America and the PGA Tour and the USGA have laid out. Like, it's just got this stigma and this label to it that is much more severe than what really is taking place at a lot of these events.
Right. And I think, you know, these guys also know their equipment so well that they also know when they have that driver exactly where they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, and people think, well, what are they, you know, barking about? Is it just a matter of a yard or two difference? Oh, no. There could be significant distance gains when your driver is right on the edge, and that's what they're trying to protect against. And now when you start to think back on some of the tee shots that Rory hits or some of these guys, and they're like 30, 40, 50 yards ahead of guys that hit it long, I think that driver is right at that edge. And I think it's allowing some of these distance gains to be what I'll consider to be significant. And that's what Lucas said. He said, you won't believe how longer you can get when your driver is not conforming anymore. And I believe it.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we will preview the U.S. Open with Andy North, get you all of his thoughts on the 40th year anniversary of his 1985 U.S. Open victory. All that and more coming up next. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Up North Michigan Golf without the drive. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan with you every single Saturday, talking all things in the world of golf. And we're only a handful of days away now from the U.S. Open, getting set to go out in Oakmont in Pennsylvania. And fitting now that we bring on a two-time U.S. Open champion, and it is the 40-year anniversary of his second U.S. Open victory. Andy North joins us now, also a member of ESPN's coverage of all things golf. Good morning, Andy. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Good morning, Cal. How are we doing? It's hard to believe it's been 40 years. Good God. But, it's always great to get near the U.S. Open and next week at Oakmont because it's going to be absolutely amazing. It is going to be a great U.S. Open.
No doubt about that. Take us back 40 years ago. What do you remember from that golf tournament that took place out at Oakland Hills?
Oh, gosh. I think the biggest thing is that I had played pretty well. I had an elbow surgery at the end of 83, and 84 was a year that I, you know, was kind of just figuring it out again. And played okay, but never came up with anything good. You know, he shot a lot of 72s on Sunday to go from, you know, maybe a 10th to a 30th kind of stuff. So I didn't get much out of it. And then 85, I played some really good golf. I shot some really good scores that year, played a lot of really good golf. And by the time I got to the Open, I really felt like, you know, there's a good reason to be there. And I thought I could play well, and I had not liked Oakland Hills when we played there for a PGA earlier. I didn't understand it at all. And that week I figured it out in practice rounds and figured out what I wanted to do, how to attack it, and you know, really had a pretty enjoyable week after that.
Hey, Andy, congratulations again on that 40th anniversary of that Open win, and I'll tell you, Oakland Hills is without question one of the more difficult golf courses that you'll ever play. But so is Oakmont. And for me, I was telling Tyler before you came on, for me, that's one of the toughest golf courses I've ever played that doesn't have any water as it just sits there day to day. It's hosted the most U.S. Opens. What, from your perspective, playing it, you know, recreationally as well as playing in the Opens and competitions, what makes Oakmont so uniquely different than most clubs across the country that they compete at?
Yeah, I, you know, first of all, I love Oakmont. I've played there. I played a national amateur there. I played a PGA, and I played two Opens. It's just such a great tournament site. The golf course, they don't have to change much at all to have a national open there compared to how the members played every week. The greens are so fast. We had media day there 3 weeks ago. They're 14 and a half for media day. You can imagine what could happen during the championship, but it's just a bear of a golf course, and the membership there enjoys the fact that it's really, really hard, and they want to play it hard, and that's one of the kind of the deals of being a member there, is that you know that you're going to go out and play the hardest golf course you probably will ever play, and it tests you off the tee. It tests you iron shots into the greens, and then once you get on the greens, they are absolutely diabolical. They are so fast. If you don't have a good day or week with the putter, you've got absolutely no chance.
Andy North with us here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. So all the conversation about the golf course has been centered around the rough. And the videos that have come out, you drop a ball in there and it disappears. It is gone. When you knew there was going to be a daunting course detail heading into a tournament, how did you prepare for that?
Oh, I loved it. To me, the more difficult it was to make a par really fit my mentality, and I really got excited about playing that. I didn't like it when you had to shoot 25 under par to win a tournament. I loved it when if you could just keep making pars and fighting and scratching and, you know, whatever you had to do to get it. That was great. Going into the Open, I would spend the 2 or 3 weeks beforehand hitting a lot of long irons, some planning to hit them off the tees, others that, you know, it's usually a difficult enough golf course that if you hit an iron off the tee, you're probably hitting a 3, 4, 5 iron into the green, which that was not a problem for me. I felt like that was a strength of my game, and if I can put it in the fairway at a U.S. Open, I was way ahead of everybody else, and that's going to be the case this week. If you drive the ball in the rough, you've got no chance to win the U.S. Open.
Andy, watching you play when I was growing up, I would say you were one of the best hard course players I ever watched, and knowing the rough being what it is and the attitude and the spirit of the Oakmont membership, do you see the USGA and the Oakmont membership having some issues on how the golf course is actually going to be set up and play when the gun eventually goes off? Because having managed these in the past, I've seen kind of tricks done to the mowers and different things to keep blades up and down and all around.
No, I think they're we've had some have a great relationship with Oakmont. It's one of our future anchor sites of the USGA, so that they've got a bunch of events coming. And why that is such a critical thing that the USGA has done, the club knows and the USGA knows that, you know, you've got X amount of events at that site for the next 30 years. A pretty good example, this year, Oakmont and the USGA spent $20 million redoing the practice facility, and it is spectacular. It went from one that was not very good, that didn't fit. Guys had trouble hitting drivers. I mean, it just wasn't a great practice, and now it's unbelievable. But you can make those kind of investments when you know it's not a one-off. They did the same thing last year at Pinehurst. They spent a ton of money putting in all the electricity underground stuff for all the hospitality and the corporate stuff that they're going to use over the next 40 or 50 years there. So it's investing in our business, and it's going to make it easier to have great events at these sites. So that's pretty cool. The golf course setup is so much more like old-fashioned U.S. Opens. The USGA lost their way a little bit in the last 20 years about how the golf courses were set up, how they were tested. You go back and look at some of the videos from the Hogan and Snead and early Palmer Nicklaus U.S. Opens. The rough was brutal. I mean, it was 8-10 inches long a lot of places. And we got away from that a little bit. And I think we're going to see a U.S. Open really test the players. There's going to be a lot of grumbling, and there'll be frustrated players. But the golf course is just perfect condition. And if you put the ball in the fairway and you put it on the greens, you've got a chance to shoot a decent score. But if you start hitting it sideways, good luck.
ESPN's Andy North with us here on the CDGA Golf Show, two-time U.S. Open champion. Looking at the field now, Scottie Scheffler, the last time we talked, we were talking about the PGA Championship. He's won twice on the tour, and including that PGA Championship since then. And, you know, by his standards, wasn't having a Scottie-like season up until that point, but then all of a sudden he pulls off the victory at the Byron Nelson, he wins the PGA Championship, top five at the Schwab, and then he goes out and defends his title at the Memorial. What do you feel like has clicked in Scottie's game? And I'm not saying, like, oh, he's had a bad season prior to that, because he hasn't had a finish outside the top 25. But by Scottie's standards, he put the bar there where it looks like, oh, it's not a Scottie-like season, but all of a sudden he's kicked it into gear. What have you seen out of him lately?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that he's recovered from his hand surgery that when he cut his hand up over Christmas. You know, he missed a lot of time early. He didn't get to work over that winter break on his game, which that's normally when guys really get things set up to how, you know, the rest of the next year goes. So he came out of the box not quite as sharp, but he still, I mean, he finished the top 10 or top 5 almost every week he played. He just wasn't quite as sharp. And you can see that sharpness is starting to come back. I mean, his month of May, he had 3 wins and won $10 million. That's a pretty nice month. he's back to being Scottie. But it'll be interesting to see what, and I don't know what the betting odds for this next week are, but I would have to think Scottie's got to be 2-1 favorite. The way he strikes the ball, I can't imagine anybody else winning there but him. If he has a Scottie week, you know, he could win by 5 or 6. It's so important to put it in the fairway there. And if you can do that, I think we might see some guys. And the hard thing, this generation doesn't lay up like our generation did off the tee. You know, everything is blasted down there, get as close as you can type of mentality. Where I think you'll see some guys hit some long irons off the tees, hit some hybrids to try to make sure they put in the fairway. Because if you can put in the fairway at Oakmont, you've got a chance. But if you hit eight out of 14 fairways, you're going to bogey 4 of those 6 holes at least. So it's going to be imperative to put it in the fairway.
And with that being said, and given the course and the setup, where would you see the winning score being?
Oh, gosh. I think it could be anywhere. It's raining there now. It rained yesterday. It looks like it's supposed to rain through Tuesday, so it's going to soften the golf course up. Could a guy shoot 4, 5, 6 under par? Maybe. I think there's as good a chance 4, 5, 6 over is what it could be versus under. I mean, it's, you shoot even par there, you are going to be really happy when the week's over.
Andy North with us for a couple more minutes here. You know, I found those betting odds for you on Scottie Scheffler. He is 3-1, so you almost hit it there right on the head. I don't know if you saw this too. Did you know that if you had bet Scottie Scheffler every single week to win the tournament over the last year and a half now, your money would be doing better than if you just invested it into the S&P 500.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. he's been amazing, and he's such a good person, and he's so good for our business. He does all the right things. It's just fun to watch him play. It really is. You know, a lot of people talk about his footwork. It doesn't make any difference what your feet are doing if the club head's put on the ball right every time, and he does that as well as anybody. He controls the club face as well as anybody we've seen in a long time.
So, Andy, who's somebody we should keep an eye on? You know, I mean, obviously you got your Rorys and Scotties, but over the last month or so and what you saw at the PGA Championship, who's a new up-and-comer that you'd say, you know what, if I had a dollar or two, I'd put it on that guy?
I think that those guys are going to have trouble this week, that, you know, the young, inexperienced player. I like a guy like Shane Lowry. He's a good ball striker. I think Colin Morikawa could have a really good week there because he strikes the ball so well. I think you got to look at guys that can put the ball in play when they need to. You know, there's a ton of, I mean, I pick Ludvig Goldberg every single week. I mean, he just looks like to me he can win anytime he tees it up. I mean, but I think you basically can look at those top 15, 20 guys that we talk about at majors all the time. And Xander Schauffele has had a struggle this year because of injuries and some stuff, but this is a golf course he could do well on. So you kind of look at the blue bloods, and I think that's where you've got to go.
Andy North, two-time U.S. Open champion, appreciate the time joining us like you do every single week leading into the majors, and enjoy watching the U.S. Open this week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You as well. Andy North,
thank you.
Two-time U.S. Open champion, also ESPN golf analyst as well. All right, when we come back, we'll get you up to date on what's taking place out at the RBC Heritage Canadian Open, and also we have to get into golf's longest day. Monday was fantastic theater. If you were just perusing the Golf Channel, looking around what was taking place across the country, because there were some great stories that got people into the U.S. Open for this upcoming week. So all that and more coming up next. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Tour Edge. Just take a look at what's going on around the tour right now as the RBC Canadian Open. This was an epic event last year, or was it 2 years ago, when Nick Taylor made the long, long putt to beat Tommy Fleetwood in a playoff. Cameron Champs, your leader right now after going 62 on Thursday. He's 12 under right now. Andrew Putnam at 10 under, two strokes off the lead. The aforementioned Nick Taylor, one of the Canadians himself, he is currently in a tie for third at 9 under, three strokes off the lead, with Thorbjørn Olesen, Richard Lee, and Victor Perez. Some other notable names on the leaderboard, you got Shane Lowry at 8 under, tied for 7th, along with Sam Burns. But yeah, kind of a scattered leaderboard this week. Ludvig Åberg is playing. He's already off and running today. 1 under through 4. He's 5 under for the tournament, tied for 39th right now. And yeah, you look at some of the names that didn't make the cut. You got guys like Rory McIlroy, Tom Kim, Max Homa. We'll get to Max in a little bit. By the way, I want to talk about Monday and the longest day in golf, because that was an epic, epic one. But yeah, so that's kind of where we're standing right now. Two local guys that we like to keep an eye on as well did not make the cut, that being Doug Gim and Nick Hardy. Nick was two strokes off of making it, and Doug a little bit further down. But even though he didn't make the cut this week, good to see that Nick Hardy's game is improving. I mean, he was missing cuts significant margins. Now he's making cuts, or at least like hovering around the cut line.
100%. And, you know, it's a process, and he's just got to keep trusting it. And the good news, to your point, is we're seeing some improvement here, and maybe the second half of this season he can catch fire and get back into that top 100 so that he can be rest assured for next year.
Yep, no doubt about that. Some other things going on around the RBC Canadian as well. Just kind of looking at like how this event plays out. I feel like we always get some sort of drama here. Like, a couple years ago, we had the guy get it was Adam Hadwin that had to be restrained by police officers after he rushed Nick Taylor from winning this thing. Remember, the RBC was the scene of where the PGA Tour was when there was the announcement that LIV Golf and the PGA Tour were going to get the band back together. So there's always some weird drama coming out around this. And I guess, I don't know, does the Rory speaking and everything that he said classify as our drama for the year? Who knows? Maybe we'll see further drama on Sunday. So there's always something about this event that, even though it may be on the back burner as it's leading into the U.S. Open, but there's always something that feels like that happens here.
Well, and to your point, it does. The Canadian Open used to be one of the biggest events on the PGA Tour when it first came into its existence. But then they've had some tough years. They've had some tough fields. They haven't gone to some of the best facilities up in that area. But I think they have finally, through RBC being the presenting sponsor and being back in that Toronto area, because, you know, Toronto, it has their version of Wall Street for Canada is right there. And so, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It's a great market, and they're at a great course. So I think over time you're going to see this event become bigger and bigger and more significant in stature, and I think you're going to see the Canadians truly embrace this as their national open. But to your point, there's always news being made, and I think that, you know, this year it may be some of that with Rory, but I think being right in front of the U.S. Open is going to still provide, I think, what entertainment and what we're about to see the news being made. And, you know, maybe some of it's going to involve a guy like Shane Lowry and what happens here at the end. Who knows? But anytime you are the venue just before you're about to go somewhere to, you know, look forward to playing in rough that's 5-6 inches deep, you know there's going to be some stories coming out of here this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, when we come back, we will get you all the details of how the field was molded for this week after the longest day in golf took place this past Monday, and it was an epic one. We'll get you some of the great stories that came about from this event and how they all ended up making the field. So all that coming up next. The segment has been brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.